Good morning and welcome. We've read the original submission, thanks very much for putting that in, and also your statement of evidence, so you don't need to reread that to us. But you're very welcome to outline your key concerns and to address the material that we just had tabled this morning.
Many thanks. I'm Ainsley McLeod, you heard from me yesterday, and
yes.
I'm here again today. I firstly just wish to apologise. It was intended to have a representative of Fire and Emergency New Zealand here today, and I sort of, what's his excuse? I can't say it's an emergency because it has certain implications, but unfortunately he was unavailable, so just got me.
Yeah.
Today I'm appearing in relation to the New Zealand Fire Service Commission's submission, but I just want to highlight to you that obviously there's been a legislation change and
That's
a name
right.
change, and we're now dealing with Fire and Emergency New Zealand under the Fire and Emergency New Zealand Act 2017.
Yep.
I'm likely to slip up every now and then and talk about the fire service. The commission's still a legal entity at the moment, so for the purposes of the submission itself, it can remain in the name of the Fire Service Commission.
Right.
My evidence is primarily concerned with two matters, the taking of water for firefighting and firefighting training, and the associated discharges of water from firefighting and firefighting training, including flame retardant foam. In terms of the taking of water, the new legislation has some impact on that. Under the Fire and Emergency New Zealand Act, there's a provision that I refer to in my evidence as, I think, section 45 of the bill. It's now section 48 of the Act. And
yep.
that Act states that any Fire and Emergency New Zealand personnel may, free of charge, use water from any water supply or any source for the purposes of performing or exercising Fire and Emergency New Zealand's functions, duties or powers, or training for the same purposes.
Yeah.
So that's quite a critical and enabling piece of legislation for the fire service itself. The Act goes on to then also amend section 14.3
yep.
of the...
14.3E.
Yes, that's exactly right, of the Resource Management Act. And I think that... is critical in terms of this plan and what this plan may or may not need to do around firefighting water.
Yeah.
Now, in my evidence, I've suggested that there be an amendment to Policy 25 to make reference particularly to firefighting training. And I just note that the relief sought in my evidence at paragraph 4.6 obviously would require amendment to refer to section 48 of the Fire and Emergency New Zealand Act 2017, so there's a need for an update of that now we have the Act in place rather than the bill, which is what I was relying on when I wrote the evidence. My evidence, I also address the need for the rules, Rule 49 and 54, to similarly deal with water takes for firefighting and firefighting training. The Section 42A report didn't consider these amendments were necessary, and I accept that. And relying on the change to Section 14.3E, I have suggested, though, that for clarity for plan users, it may be useful to include a note to reference Section 14 in respect of the rules for water takes, so I can probably leave that there. In relation to discharges, the Commission's submission seeks the inclusion of a new discharge rule to deal with the associated discharges of firefighting water, firefighting training discharge as well, including the foam. The Section 42A report concluded that these discharges were permitted by Section 330 of the Act, being the emergency purposes provision, particularly in relation to an actual firefighting incident, if you like. And I don't consider this to be a case. And I have provided you today with Section 330 of the Act. And I just note that it only really allows some parties to respond to some emergencies, and it doesn't deal with firefighting in a general sense. And so I don't think that the fire service have ever relied on Section 330 to deal with fighting fires.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if they had, the council would be under Section 330A would be receiving a letter from the fire service every time the fire service made a discharge for firefighting, and that's certainly not the case.
Yeah.
And not how it works. Instead, the fire service needs to rely on either a permitted activity rule in a regional plan or Section 341 of the Resource Management Act that I've also provided you today, that provides a defence to prosecution, basically, and where there's an action or event to which the prosecution relates was necessary for the purposes of saving or protecting life or health or preventing serious damage to property.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, if you like, for the fire service if any council were concerned about a discharge associated with firefighting. I don't really think either relying on Section 341 is really, or somehow relying on Section 330 is an efficient and effective way to deal with the discharges from firefighting, including training. And I think the purpose of the Act is better achieved by the inclusion of a new role. My evidence has promoted that role, including a role that provides for the discharges from training as well. I've set out in my evidence my view that the effects of these discharges would be very limited and quite minor, and as such could easily be crafted into a permitted activity rule subject to some conditions that would enable the fire service to carry out its statutory functions. It continues to implement the policies of the proposed plan 13 to 15. It's consistent with the approach in the air plan here, where live fire training and air discharges are all permitted activities to enable the fire service to burn an abandoned building to learn how to fight fire. It also enables the mitigation of potential effects in a way that probably outweighs the minor effects of any such discharges, and better achieves the purpose of the Act. Now, in my evidence, I've promoted a rule, and I think there's a typo in that rule, but I think in the clause small Roman I think the reference in that rule should refer to returning the water to the same water body.
Aye.
That makes sense. Now, that's as far as I was going to go in terms of discharges, and there was really only, I think that just making sure that I highlighted for you again the need to correct Rule 79 to refer to Fire Emergency New Zealand as opposed to the Rural Fire Authority.
Yeah.
I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, and absolutely no problem with updating the plan to refer to the name of the new agency. That's pretty straightforward. Just in terms of taking my understanding now of the RMA in Section 14.3e, is you're totally provided for, both for training and firefighting, so we don't need to do any more there, do we?
Yes, and that's why I've agreed with the 42A report and suggested that perhaps a note to make that clear.
Yeah. Just in terms of the discharges, certainly understand the point that you're making, but the problem we have is before we can insert a permitted activity rule into the plan allowing a discharge, we have to satisfy ourselves that Section 70 of the RMA has been met.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have a permitted activity rule unless we're satisfied that the effects in Section 70 won't occur.
Yep.
Do you have any evidence that would lead us to be able to reach that conclusion?
I'm clear that there must be a way to craft a rule that can meet your obligations and also provide for the activities the fire service need to do.
Yeah.
I'm happy to go away and do more work to work up a permitted activity with a suite of conditions that enables you to discharge your duty.
The thought I had was that depending, if you're seeking a discharge rule to cover both training and actual firefighting, then the discharge from fighting a fire could contain all sorts of nasty contaminants depending on what
was
burning.
That's exactly right, and there
and
have
so
been
just
examples,
Just let me finish my question. So I was just wondering if you might be, or the fire service might be better off actually doing a proper AEE and seeking a region-wide consent for a long duration to enable those discharges to occur, rather than trying to craft a permitted activity rule to cover every eventuality of every burning building and whatever those buildings may or may not contain.
Crafting an AEE for every eventuality is probably as problematic as your Section 32 analysis.
Section 70 I was talking about.
Yeah, I guess, once again, it's something that fire service have given some consideration to, and in the Greater Wellington jurisdiction, there's been an interim resource consent around at least water takes and some discharges for training only. That was an interim measure until such time as they notified a new plan. In Auckland, this matter has been achieved through planning, and there are other jurisdictions, particularly where plan reviews aren't available, where a resource consent path has been taken. So that is an alternative for the fire service Fire and Emergency New Zealand.
Okay, if you're aware of, I'm not worried about the take anymore because I think that's sorted, but if you're aware of permitted activity rules and other regional plans that deal with these discharges, so you can show us examples of actual rules.
Yes, the New Auckland Unitary Plan has a role that permits it.
Yeah, so if you can obtain a copy of that and provide it to us, that would be helpful. All right, I'll just see if we have any other questions for you. Morris.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I noticed that big typo in that proposed rule, and could I just clarify exactly the way it should read? It says, at the moment, it says, use for emergency purposes, service training purposes, must only water body. Does that mean must only discharge back to the water body?
Yeah, I think it's discharge to the same water body.
Must only discharge to the same water body.
Yeah.
All right, thanks very much. That's all.
No questions.
Yes. Yeah. You're seeking to amend policy 35 for training access to water in times of priority low flow for training. How often would that clash of wanting to train in a low flow limitation be out there? Is that a regular occurrence?
My understanding is that the fire service would seek to avoid taking water where there was very little water available.
Yeah.
And that's certainly my understanding of how it works in the Southland context. They train about 10 times a month, but would seek to train in places, and I think this is in the body of the Fire Service Commission submission. They seek to take water from water bodies that have substantial water because they're obviously caches for pumping and stuff. The reason for adding that into Policy 25 was the Policy 25 reflects Section 14.3 of the Act, and as that's changed, I think Policy 25 should change to say the same thing.
So you're looking for compatibility between 14 and 25.
Yeah.
So just one other question. So what sort of a volume of abstraction would occur in these training events?
That's also in the body of the submission itself. And they do a maximum of 2 hours take, and it depends what they're using to pump. Total volume, so just in the body of the submission, depending on whether it's a pump or what type of fire engine they're using.
Yeah.
There are different volumes over a certain period of time.
So, So your max is 202 cubic metres an hour.
Yeah, that's
right. So, and that could happen up to 10 times a month?
Yeah, in 2 hour intervals when they train. But you would never have all of those pumps for 2 hours in total operating 10 times a month. Obviously, that there are different training scenarios and different durations of the training, but that would be the absolute maximum.
Okay. Thank you.
And Lloyd?
No further questions, Mr. Chairman. I think you made your point quite clear.
Andrew. Yeah, thanks. I've already asked my questions, but look forward to getting those examples of actual permitted activity discharge rules from other jurisdictions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.